Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Aaron provide helpful tips on how to get ready. Ready or not, here comes Ready Radio.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to the new Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. This week, we're going to be talking a little bit about water. And I know that we've covered water in the past, but it is such an important topic and something that is so meaningful for everybody. That because, I mean, we're made up of water. We need water to live. We can only go 3 days without water, at which point we expire. The incredible importance of water in every aspect of our lives, for cooking, for cleaning, for drinking, for bathing, for everything that we need to do, it just can't be overemphasized. And so we're going to take this next hour to talk to you a little bit about what water is going to mean in a survival situation, ways to get water, ways to store water, ways to purify water, ways to distill water, ways to make sure that the water is clean, and then some of the problems with water, things that can go wrong with water. And we're going to be talking a lot about what water is going to mean for us throughout not only our lives today, but in the future. So as we get into the water debate, I know, Aaron, you own a water purification system. I know that I own a water purification system. My house has water that is triple filtered before it even comes into the house. I use well water. People who are on city water have concerns about fluorine and fluoride and other things that the municipality puts into
chlorine
its water.
And chloramine and
Yeah, I mean, these are important aspects. I mean, when you think about water, what comes to your mind as the main concerns?
Clean water.
And clean water really is the critical issue. We've got to make sure that the water that we're giving our children is suitable. But, you know, just saying clean water really isn't enough, because water can look clean and be horrible, and water can look horrible and still be drinkable. I mean, what is really the main concerns that we have about water?
Is that it's not tainted with chemicals and poisons and viruses and all the things that the Berkey takes out of the water.
Exactly. I mean, and Berkey is where we're going with a lot of this discussion, obviously, because it is really the best water filtration system out there. I mean, when you add in the arsenic and fluoride filters, the filtration rate of the Berkey is just phenomenal. But I want to slow down and really break apart, because you're right. I mean, we've got harmful chemicals, we've got toxins, we've got contaminants. So that's one level.
Insecticides.
Then we've got things like, you know, bacteria and viruses, which is a completely different level. And then we have sediments and other things we just really don't want to be drinking, which is a third level. So there's a whole bunch of different things going on when we start to talk about clean water. And even water that looks good isn't necessarily clean when it has, you know, heavy metals or pesticides or insecticides in it. I'm thinking back to just a little while ago, there was a big problem, and this was a different type of contamination, but up in Lake Erie, there was a huge problem where one of the cities had a algae bloom, when the algae produced a toxin, and it was all in the municipal water supply, and they were told, hey, don't drink the water. Not just a boil advisory, like if you have an E. coli contamination, but a complete ban on drinking the water.
That's Toledo.
Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's a garden spot on the earth.
But I have spent a lot of time in Toledo, Ohio, believe it or not.
Really?
And I never drank their water.
Why not?
I always bought bottled water. There was some weird taste to the water in Toledo that I could not describe. It was just horrible. I mean, just kind of an aftertaste that I was just not very fond of. So I never drank the water in Toledo when I was there. I always bought bottled water.
Was it vaguely reminiscent of maybe algae?
It was vaguely reminiscent of stank. That's what it was, stank.
Well, there you have it, folks. I mean, the water in Toledo has some issues, but
this year alone, we've had several water crises. I mean, you think about the West Virginia water crisis back during the winter, and there was a chemical dumped into the Elk River, and this one hits home for me because I was born and raised in West Virginia. So some of the water supply that was actually affected was the water supply that would have been my drinking water as a child.
Okay.
And so the Elk River flows into the Kanawha River, that flows into the Ohio River, and of course I lived on the Ohio River growing up. So the fear of this contaminating the water that I would have been drinking, but the chemical that was spilled into the water was a chemical they used to wash coal dust before they burn it. And it was improperly stored, and a lot of people got involved trying to get it cleaned up, and it took weeks and weeks and weeks, and still people in West Virginia say the water's not drinkable in those areas. It took like 9 counties.
Wow.
So it affected something like 150,000 people's drinking water, and there were pictures all over the internet at the time where...
And I'm assuming that these 9 counties are not densely populated counties to get to 150,000 people. I'm assuming that they're rather sparse. It's not like being in a major metropolitan area.
We've got two major metropolitan... Well, not major metropolitan like Atlanta. I mean, you've got two very decent-sized cities, though. There are no major metropolitan areas in West Virginia. Let me make this clear. This is West Virginia we're talking about, not Georgia. The major metropolitan area, the closest thing they have is Charleston, which is the state capital.
Okay, and do you know roughly the size of that city?
I would say 30, 40,000 people. It's not a huge city.
Right, and in comparison, the Atlanta metro area has, what, like 1.5 million people?
Right.
So if we had granted, now, 9 counties, 150,000 people is a massive number of people for this area. The amount of land affected was much larger than 150,000 people represents. If we had had this kind of contamination that hit through Smyrna, Marietta, and the Chattahoochee, we would be looking at like 3 million people affected without water.
Right. But it still doesn't minimize the impact of the people without water for 3 weeks. I mean, I was driving through there on a regular basis during this time because of the job I had at the time, and there was no water on the shelves. You couldn't buy a bottle of water to save your soul.
People were going all the way to Pennsylvania and to Virginia to try to find bottled water to buy.
Mm-hmm. And all the bottled water was gone. You could walk into a convenience store and look for just a 20-ounce Aquafina. There was none. And you go into the bathrooms there to use the bathroom, and the water was odd colors. And the toilet was kind of a greenish-blue color and smelled like licorice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that water, and it was really stunning to me because it reminded me very much of the glacial runoff water in Alaska, only it wasn't, and it shouldn't have been. I mean, I know the John Denver song with about country roads where it says, "Stranger to blue waters," and I know that West Virginia isn't supposed to really have blue water like that. And it's only all of a sudden, here we go, it looks like Kool-Aid.
It looked very much like sludge, some of the stuff that was in the water. And even after, they shut down the water and then they flushed the whole water system, I say that very loosely. They told the people that it was safe to drink. And even then, it was still green and licorice scented when it was coming out. It was not safe to drink. And there's a lot of people that have been involved, people who stand up for people's rights. Erin Brockovich got very involved in that situation and still is. I have to give her credit. She likes to get involved in situations like that and help out people who can't help themselves.
And it's commendable that people pull together like that. But, I remember from Toledo was the mayor coming out and taking a glass of supposedly tap water and drinking it on the stage and saying, "The water's fine now." And you get a lot of people who end up trying to be Baghdad Bob. They're told, "Go out there and tell everybody everything is fine. Everything's fine. Don't worry. Don't look at the man behind the curtain, even if the ship is sinking." And you can't, it degrades trust in the government. It degrades trust in anybody who takes that kind of role when you can obviously look and see that everything is not fine. When the water comes out smelling like licorice, you know it's not working.
Right.
And somebody needs to say, "Hey, this doesn't work. We got to do something. Let's fix it. Let's change it. Let's clean it. Let's do what we have to do." But I'm not going to stand there and say, "Oh, everything is wonderful," when it obviously isn't. But there are people who will do that. And here we are trying to get the real word out that, you need to be able to filter your water. You need to do something. You need to have water stored up. And this is a bigger issue because the West Virginia thing, there wasn't a filter out there that would claim that they would remove that contaminant.
No, nobody knew exactly what to do with that contaminant. They didn't even know what the long-term effects were on humans with this contaminant. So immediately...
It had never been tested.
No, and why would it be? I mean, who would ever think that this would be something that they would need to know how it affected humans? It's not something they allowed people to come in contact with. But see, you also have to consider the fact that these people live in an environment that is potentially dangerous anyway. They know that they live in the chemical valley where all these chemicals are produced, made, and used. A lot of the companies around there are owned like DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
And so immediately that it's the chemical valley. And I mean, when I was growing up in that area, I remember times when we were put on alert and not allowed to leave the school because of potential chemical leaks into the air.
Wow.
And you had to wait until it was all clear.
That's really a frightening prospect. And this, you know, we're talking about water today, but, you know, gas masks and air filtration and any sort of chemical spill or contamination. And you don't have to live in Chemical Valley to have something horrible happen, because these chemicals are being trucked, are being trained, are being transported all across this country every day on cars and trucks that are and railroad cars that are not up to spec, where there are you know, catastrophes happen. Shoot, you don't even have to have someone who's inattentive operating it. You could just have a moose walk across the railroad track or a cow get on the road, and instantly you have a chemical spill of titanic proportions.
Amazing mess to clean up. If you've ever seen just diesel fuel along the interstate get spilled, a tanker spill diesel fuel, it's just an incredible mess to try to clean up.
And it takes, you know, response and the hazmat teams. And what if it was something that was really, really caustic or really dangerous? We're coming up on our first commercial break. Folks, stay tuned. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Ready or not, here we are, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town, and this week we're talking about water. In our first segment, if you're just tuning into us, you heard us talk a little bit about, you know, the crisis in Toledo and the West Virginia crisis, which Aaron has a lot of personal investment in. And we were talking about how, you know, no matter where you live, you could have a contamination, an epic contamination due to the transporting of dangerous chemicals by rail or by road. And this happens all the time. And you know, you drive down the freeway. You're there with your family in your old wood panel station wagon with the third seat row seat in the back facing the wrong way, and Junior's climbing around, and the little girl's playing with her Nintendo DS and talking to her friend on her cell phone, and your wife is sitting in the seat next to you and fiddling with the radio, and you look over and you see this big old tanker truck go by with a smiling cow on the side, and you think, oh, you know, how wonderful. And as it goes by, there's an orange and a red and a green tag on the back, and little triangle, little diamond shapes that have numbers on them, and a little fire, and a little little guy that looks like he's dying of I don't know, allergies or something. And you think, wait a minute,
wow,
was that really milk going by me, or was that something horrible?
It was something horrible, because they don't placard milk. Well, those are hazmat placards.
What do those placards mean? That's something that I've always wondered.
Those placards actually each have a meaning. The color of them means something. The drawings on them mean something. But most importantly, the numbers on them mean things. And if you Google the number you see on those, and please do not do this while you're driving. So if you're going to Google 1154 hazmat, do not do this while you're driving. You can either pull over, just wait till you get home, because it's really not that important. But you can Google and find out what exactly they're hauling. You know, sometimes they're hauling unleaded, sometimes they're hauling diesel fuel, sometimes they're hauling hydrochloric acid. You never really know what's in those trucks until you try to Google, but it's got to be over 1,000 pounds to require that placard.
So if you're running less than 1,000 pounds of, I don't know, something mustard gas, it's fine.
Right.
You don't even have to declare it.
I can carry 999 pounds of
plutonium.
No, you wouldn't want to carry plutonium, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to get that without certain licenses anyway. But well, you say hydrogen, liquid hydrogen.
You mean they don't have it in every convenience store in 1981?
No.
Do you get the reference?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. We are now back to the present, folks. Not in 1981.
Mr. Fusion, here we come in the back of every DeLorean. Anyway, no, there. But as we're, you know, we've got all these trucks out there. They're carrying hazardous stuff, and accidents happen every day. And it may, you know, sometimes it's because the drivers are overworked and they're driving when they're too tired, or they shouldn't be on the road, or they're sick and they're trying to make a living for their family. And you know, who can blame them for trying to just keep going and doing what they have to do? But there's that aspect. There's also just random happenstance. I mean, what happens, you know, if there's a tornado that's going through a truck stop?
You know, wow. Can you imagine the mixture?
Yeah. I mean, what would happen if you have a tornado that hit a truck stop where all these trucks had pulled over to get away from the storm, and you have seven or eight tanker trucks, and you've got all the other stuff. You've got batteries. You've got diesel fuel. You've got everything into one mixture. and then it rolls downhill into the stream or the creek.
With every trucker's jug of urine.
Yeah, there's some toxic stuff.
Yeah.
Mountain Dew fueled. So you look at all of this and you say, it could happen anywhere. It really could happen anywhere. It doesn't. You don't have to live next to the nuclear plant to have a disaster. You don't have to live next to the chemical plant. And, you know, one of my oldest jokes, things that I love to tell people is, why are Minnesotans healthier than everybody else down in, like, New Orleans or Mississippi?
Why?
Because the Minnesotans are the first ones to pee in the Mississippi River.
Everybody else is drinking it.
And there we go. So you don't even have to be next to the plant. If the plant is next to your water source, you're mm-hmm. in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
When something happens, what do you do when the plant is next to your water source?
Well, I mean, we're going to revisit the West Virginia water crisis here. Some of the areas that were affected were 30 to 40 miles from where that water was originally contaminated.
Yeah, and who thinks about that? This is something that every single prepper and every single homeowner should do. They should figure out, where does their water come from?
Where does your water come from? I think that you should also have a secondary source set up for where you get your water from, just in case.
Yes. And
rain barrels, great ideas.
If your homeowners association will allow you to have rain barrels, they're a great idea. If you're living in an apartment, you may not have that kind of an option. And so water storage is going to be something that we talk in depth in our next segment. And in getting there, I really want people to think about, where does your water come from? Where does your water come from? Can you identify the source of your water? For the city of Atlanta, a lot of it's the Chattahoochee River.
Yikes.
Now, I would ask every person who lives in the city of Atlanta, who gets their water from a tap, to go out and look at the Chattahoochee River once this week.
Take a real good sniff, y'all.
Yeah. Go out there and see where your water comes from. If you live in Rome and your water comes from a reservoir, go look at it. If you live in Cobb or even anywhere in Alabama and your water's coming out of the Lake Allatoona, go look at it. If you're living up in Gainesville, go out to Lake Lanier and look at your water. And tell me that you would be willing to scoop down and take a cup of that just on its own and drink it.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's a place on the Chattahoochee River right near the Cobb-Fulton line where open sewage is flowing into the Chattahoochee right now. I have seen it.
You've seen it.
I've seen
it. So you've seen floaters in the Chattahoochee.
I've seen some nasty stuff in the Chattahoochee.
Gross.
And it's going downstream to everybody else. And what I was told was that there's actually been a litigation about this open, contaminant, and that there's a lawsuit and there's running fines every day until it's fixed, and nobody's doing a squat about it.
Nobody cares.
And so here we are, we're trying to talk about clean water. Isn't that what you said, Aaron, at the beginning? I want clean water.
Clean water. And how do I get that clean water in today's society? Well, I filter my own. That's how I get it.
That's pretty much what you're going to have to do, because you can't trust all the Baghdad Bobs out there saying, all the water is fine. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Well, have you ever seen one of the water quality reports from, like, your local water company? A lot of these places, you can get the water quality report yearly. They're legally responsible.
Required.
For making sure you get it. So if you don't have a copy of your water quality report, you should ask your local water company for that. You'll find out that there are trace amounts of radiation in your water that are allowed to be there.
Exactly. And lots more than just trace amounts of radiation, but there's all sorts of bacteria, there's all sorts of contaminants, there's everything. And it's in
microbial cysts.
Yeah, and it's just, as long as it's below the legal limit, it's okay. And so here you are drinking all of this crud that's coming out of your tap, and who knows? And even more important is, what if you're on a well?
So we're talking about legal limit here. How much fecal matter should be legal to be allowed in your water? That's my question.
Yeah, for sure. But if you're on a well, there's no regulations of your water at all. You don't have anybody testing it unless you're doing it.
Right.
Now, I believe that well water is healthier and safer. And, if you have a deep well and you're tapped well into your aquifer, that's fantastic.
It depends on where your septic tank is.
A lot of people have their wells be way too shallow. There are people who have 30 and 40-foot wells in North Georgia, and I know this. And you're not getting anywhere away from the runoff then. You're getting whatever pesticides your neighbors are spraying. You're getting whatever they're putting on their lawns right into your drinking water. And how are you going to get that out? Well, the only way you're going to get out contaminants like that is filtration. You know, we're going to talk about water storage. We're going to talk about boiling water. We're going to talk about distillation. And some of these are good things for you, and some of things are good things for getting out contaminants. But there are certain contaminants that you can't boil away. They have a boiling point with the water, and they will travel with the water as you boil it. The only way you're going to get rid of these things is through filtration, which leads us to talking about the best forms of filtration, which is another important aspect of water purity, is how to get good water filtration and a good system. And there's lots of things out there. I mean, I think everybody on earth owns a Brita pitcher at this point, or a Pure pitcher. And you say, wow, that's great, you know, because it removes all this stuff and the water tastes better afterwards. But Brita and Pure, they're not really filtration. What they are is they're kind of water conditioning. And it's not meant to remove bacteria and viruses and heavy metals and all of everything. What it's supposed to do is it uses activated carbon to remove a lot of the odors and the trace elements so that it tastes better when you drink it, not necessarily making it really pure or clean. And we need to have a better system. We need to have something that really does remove everything so that you're getting good, clean water. And when I say remove everything, we have to be a little careful there, too, because distillation removes everything, but distillation isn't good for you.
You need those minerals and things that are in there that distillation removes. And water has minerals naturally in it, especially well water.
Yes.
And those minerals are very important for the human body to function.
Mm-hmm. I mean, your body needs lots more than just water to be able to survive. And when we start to talk about multivitamins, a lot of what we're talking about are minerals, you know, rocks.
They're water-soluble minerals, which is why bringing them into your body in water is the best way to bring them in. So when you filter all of those out, it's a bad thing. So you want a filter that's going to filter out the bad things, but leave the good.
Yeah, and that's a hard balance to make, especially if you want something that's going to remove things like fluoride and arsenic, which are prevalent in the water from municipal sources. These are things which, you know, are heavy metals. They build up in the body. They have negative effects. And I'm really cautious about fluoride, especially around children. I think that, you know, on the periodic table, it's very close to iodine, which your body needs and craves, and your body absorbs it very quickly. But I don't think that it's necessarily a good thing for growing bodies to have in them. And instead, I'd much rather see iodine. I mean, that was one of the best things that we ever did, was iodinizing salt so that you get this important mineral. We're coming up on another commercial break, folks. We'll be right back. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the new Ready Radio right here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. This week we've been talking about water. We talked a little bit about filtration. Of course, the huge disasters that were in Toledo and West Virginia just this year. Water is such an important topic. And we're looking at other ways besides filtration to clean up your water. And with some of the chemicals and contaminants, you can't even boil it away. But you can get to a place where a boil advisory is necessary. And the idea behind boiling your water is that if you, it's just like pasteurizing your milk, if you get it up to 212 degrees for a sufficient amount of time, that all the bacteria and viruses in it will die, and then it's safe to drink, as long as it doesn't have any other contaminants in it. So if you had, let's say, an E. coli contamination of a municipal water source, they may turn around and say, you have a boil water advisory. And they actually have apps for the smartphones now, where they'll send you a quick text and say, hey, your water's contaminated. Boil it for the next couple of days, because otherwise you'll get sick and die, which is kind of handy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it an exciting prospect for your government to be telling you, by the way, you might die if you drink the water.
By the way, the water we provide for you, you shouldn't drink it unless you boil it.
But everything is fine. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Everything is awesome.
Yeah, that's a great movie. That is a great... The Lego movie that came out this last year, awesome, folks. You really need to see that. It would strike a chord with anyone who enjoys this show. So we're talking about boil advisories. Okay, so your water has some kind of bacterial, biological contamination in it. Bringing it up to a boil will kill what's in the water and allow it to be safe to drink. But the next step beyond boiling the water, simply boiling the water to kill bacteria or viruses, is using the heat to boil the water to collect the steam to condense back down so that you have clear, clean, pure water with nothing left in it. Now,
we're talking distillation.
Distillation.
Here.
Now, you can buy distilled water at, you know, in any grocery store, but it's not good for you. As Aaron was mentioning in our last segment, distilled water has some real problems with it.
It has a lot of problems with it. There's no minerals in it. Yeah. Sorry.
And the lack of minerals means the water, I mean, water is looking to absorb things, right?
Right. Did you know you can't boil distilled water? You can't bring it back to a boil?
Because it'll get hot, but it doesn't have anything to collect the little bubbles around.
But there's no impurities to boil out of it, therefore it will not boil.
And there's, I mean, it's really good for some applications. If you're going to be putting water in a radiator, if you're going to be putting water into a closed system, great things to do. A humidifier.
Humidifier is great.
Yeah, because you're not going to have buildup of the collected, shall we say, crud on the coils. And this is all really good for uses for distillation. The other thing is you know, like a humidifier takes the water and puts it in the air. Your air conditioner takes water out of the air. You can be collecting distilled water off your air conditioner throughout the summer months here and get massive amounts of water. I've heard the estimates is usually between a 5 and 15 gallons of water a day from a properly running air conditioner. So you could be diverting that water rather than just running out underneath the house or on the ground. You could put it to a garden, you could put it up for storage, and then you have distilled water for later uses. But again, not the best thing for drinking. However, because it is it's trying to attract as much as it can, distilled water, while it would suck the minerals out of your body when you drank it, trying to become content neutral.
Would absorb minerals like crazy if you added them back to it.
Yes. So it makes a fantastic cleaning agent. It's great for bathing people with because it's constantly trying to pull minerals back to itself.
So concentrated cleaning water.
Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a company out there that makes a claim that they can clean your carpets with their patented water that cleans extra well, and they don't have to use any harsh chemicals because the water does the whole work.
It's distilled water, folks.
There you go.
Wow.
It's a thought.
We missed the bus on that one.
Yeah, really. I mean, we could have been rich. We could have been rich. Could have been millionaires if we just thought to use distilled water to clean things. But people have been using distilled water to clean things for years and years. And so you have a distillation machine built into your house, especially down here in the Southeast.
Yeah.
Called an air conditioner. Creates 5 to 15 gallons of distilled water for you a day if you just want to save it.
A month and a half can store water enough to fill up 2 jacuzzi tubs.
There you go. Easily. And you're talking about, you know, you talked about rain barrels earlier, and rain barrels are a great idea, but, you know, people who live in an apartment complex can't have rain barrels, but they sure can have an air conditioner, and they can store their water. And so now we're talking about proper water storage. And water, left to its own devices, will keep potable water, will keep for about 6 months in a sealed container. Now, after that, you can, if you have a proper filtration method, you can filter the water, clean it up, and be able to drink it anyway.
Or if you treat it.
You can treat it. And how would you go about treating it?
I'm assuming you'd put chlorine tablets in, which is totally against my religion.
Well, you don't have to use tablets. You can actually just use an eyedropper and regular Clorox bleach.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. About one drop from an eyedropper per gallon will treat the water and make it so that it's safe to store for longer term. And then
filter it.
You can filter it after and take the chlorine out if you wanted to. And we're going back to filtration with something like a Brita, not a Brita pitcher, but a Berkey or ProPure. There's a lot of companies out there who are trying to mimic it. But Berkey was
drink
the
it
first.
Right out of there with that Life Straw.
Yeah, there you go. Life Straw, too.
You could just drink right out of the hooch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to get your face that close anyway.
Ew.
Yeah. And, you know, the sad thing is you go down there and the water smells bad and it looks bad and you're kind of iffy about it. And you look down, there's somebody out there with a cane pole fishing and getting the fish and going to eat the fish that came out of this nasty water. And you're like, man, what is wrong with you? I can understand
that's
if
exactly
you're starving
why I
to
don't
death.
Eat catfish.
Ooh. Ooh. That's nasty. Anyway.
Why I don't eat catfish.
I like to, you know, do my fishing in a little cleaner place, like, you know, maybe Captain D's.
Yeah, I've noticed.
So, folks, we're talking about water. Water everywhere, but ne'er a drop to drink, the old saying goes. And, you know, that's that talking about ocean water. We're going to come up on that. And desalinization, that's another important aspect. Georgia's a coastal state. We're near Florida. Everybody's got ocean water around here. You know, if you live in Nebraska or Kansas, this may not be as big an issue. But when you're looking out at the ocean water, there's another huge source of water. The only thing you need is an enormous amount of power to be able to desalinize the ocean water to make it drinkable, because you cannot drink ocean water.
You could use the sun.
In part, yeah. You could use the sun to make kind of a solar still to get some of it off. The problem is that either you're going to have an awful lot of materials to be able to make one big enough to actually get a gallon of water a day off of it, or you're going to have not enough water versus, you know, the effort involved. It kind of becomes self-defeating at a point.
Always burn a fire under it like a liquor still.
That's where you end up having to go. And if you're in an emergency situation, if you're on a desert island and there's lots of trees around.
Palm fronds.
Yeah, you could toast those things day in, day out to boil water to make us, you know, to collect the steam and have drinking water. Now, if you're, you know, Israel trying to desalinize water for a nation, that's not as practical, because the amount of energy involved versus the amount of water you're getting is self-defeating. And that's been the big problem with desalinization across the years, is that it takes so much energy to come up with so little water that it's self-defeating for large scale. But if you were stuck and it was just you or just a couple of people and you needed to boil water to get clean drinking water, it's absolutely a viable solution. Plus, boiling the water that way kills off all the bacteria, viruses, and you're not going to have many contaminants that still make it through that. So it's viable.
And in the end, you have salt to season your food with.
Fresh, you know, good sea salt, which people pay an arm and a leg for.
Which can also be used for a lot of other things, food preservation.
It's medicinal.
Aid.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's a great idea in a survival situation, you know, in near an ocean environment. You can get your water that way. And
I love how prepping is so intertwined.
What do you mean?
All these topics are so intertwined. You process one section, okay? Like, we're talking about water here. We're processing water. We're going to desalinize the water. We're going to take the salt out of the water. Well, that salt can be used for our food, to preserve our food. So we go into a whole different category of prepping, of another way to prep for emergencies using that salt.
Exactly. Every aspect of being ready brings you to another area that you could be more ready in. And that's kind of the fundamental mission of Ready Radio. If you look at our old shows at www.readyradio.net, if you listen to us on iTunes, if you look back at our mission statement, what we want to do is to educate people, to inform them, to bring them new ideas, and to get them to think about being self-sufficient and bring all of these topics together in one way. And we are coming up on a break, folks. I encourage you to tune in for our next segment. It's going to be our last broadcast segment. We will have one more radio internet segment following this, but you're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. And when we left off our last break, we were talking about how prepping takes so many different aspects, and we pull them all together, and one part influences another part, which influences another part. You know, when you're stranded on the desert island and you're distilling salt water to get drinking water, you end up with salt that can be used for first aid, it can be used for food preservation, and the idea that, you know, this is a dual purpose, dual use aspect, and you're getting everything that you come up with, you find a use for. And that plays into every aspect of our lives. We compost, you know, so we make use of the scraps from the kitchen table. We look for, you know, alternative uses for containers. You know, when we buy our milk in the cardboard container so we don't get plastic residue in our milk, then we turn that cardboard container into a mold for our homemade soap, and we take that and we use the homemade soap where we rendered our bacon fat from the previous morning's breakfast into soap so we can use it to clean afterwards. I mean, all of these things come together, and some people call it recycling, but for the rest of us, it's just a way of living. It's just a way of being, that we can do more and be more self-sufficient, and that's really the purpose of Ready Radio. And here we are are talking about water in our final segment, and it's the most important thing about water is not just having one method. And I know, Aaron, you mentioned earlier in the show how you need to not only know where your water is coming from, but have a secondary source of water. So if there was a contamination, your primary source, when you turn on the tap, if it comes out smelling like licorice, you have somewhere else to go.
I think it's very important to always know, I have a secondary plan for everything, not just your water.
And sometimes even a primary, secondary, and tertiary plan. And that's where I think of some of the products that TruPrep carries comes in handy. Because, you know, for me, my primary method of water filtration has been and always will be a Berkey filter. They're large. They take up a kitchen table. They produce massive amounts of water. The largest, the Crown, with 8 elements, will produce 26 gallons of water an hour. This is basically can run a small field hospital or a village all by itself. It's enough water every hour for 26 people per day. I mean, you think about that. If you've got the water in a field or a lake or a stream that you can pump in through this thing, you can produce hundreds of gallons of water a day, take care of everybody's needs in spades, and it's a fantastic thing. But it's not the best solution in every situation, because when it's fully assembled, it's the size of a Bun coffee maker, and with 26 gallons of water pumping through it, it's going to be around 40 pounds when it's got the water in the top and the bottom, and it's not something that's easily transportable. So then you go to using a Katadyn system, which is only the size of a little bigger than my fist. You know, a Katadyn micro can do 10,000 gallons of water. It removes bacteria, not viruses, but it removes bacteria and heavy metals. It's portable, it's lightweight, it's a pump. So you can put the one end into a stream or into a pond and pump into another container for cooking or drinking or whatever you need to do. And then if all else fails, you could have something as simple as the ubiquitous Life Straw, which TruPrep also carries. And here, you know, you've got your straw and you're trying to suck up whatever you can.
I always get these mental images of people with the Life Straw and mud puddles, like little dogs lapping at the mud puddles. I don't know why.
And, you know, we joke, but if all else fails, if your Katadyn failed, if your Berkey failed, if nothing else, a Life Straw would be a viable
backup.
Yeah, but that's really what its role is. And then for $20, it's a great backup for a backup. I mean, the Katadyn system is going to set you back $300, and the Berkey is going to set you back, you know, $250 to $300. But if, you know, when all else fails, having an extra source is a great idea. So it's something that I wouldn't, you know, if someone came up to me and said, you know, I'm a prepper, I'm ready for anything because I have water filtration. I said, oh, okay, well, what kind of water filtration do you have? And they said, well, the only thing I carry is a Life Straw. I might be a little concerned. But if you came up to me and said, you know, I've got a Katadyn system and it works really great, but if something happened to it, or if I lost it, or if, you know, I lost my pack or something, I always carry a Life Straw in my pocket too. You know, that's a viable solution.
Yeah.
And I can see that happening. And the beauty is that our wonderful sponsors at TruPrep, they carry all three of these products. You can go in there and you can get your Berkey, you can get your Katadyn, you can get your Life Straw all in one spot and have a complete water solution system. Then all you need to do is be able to distill water, and there are places, you know, online and other sources to get distillation equipment that you can use for distilling water in from salt water or from, you know, bacterial water, or even if you just wanted to have water for cleaning your carpet.
I wonder if the revenuers would bust it up if you were just distilling water.
Yeah, there are complications for distilling equipment. That's
distilling
for sure.
Distilling anything.
Yeah, distilling anything. But the beauty is that, you know, we're looking at this as survival equipment for keeping our family safe. And every one of us has distilled water pumping out of their house right now. If you've got your air conditioner turned on, you've got distilled water coming out and you can store it up. And that's another great idea is how do you store water? Well, you know, there are products like a couple of weeks ago we highlighted the Water Brick, having barrels, even just a 5-gallon bucket just to put water in, put a lid on it, keep it aside. Because I remember when my hot water heater broke, boom, there we go. I needed to have water, and because I had water stored up, Thanksgiving was saved. I've told this story before, and I'll tell it again on this show and in person. But having that water set aside was a huge deal for me because I was able to keep going with my normal daily life.
Or like when you're cooking dinner and you have that little bit of water set to the side, and all of a sudden your water filter needs changed.
And yeah, well, depending on what type of filtration you have, you know, things like the Berkey, they kind of keep filtering indefinitely. It starts to slow down gradually. But some of the whole house filters will clog up in an instant, and especially if you have high iron content.
You have soap in your hair.
Suddenly you just don't have water in the house, and that changes everything. You got to run out and put in a new filter. And so having just a little water, you know, in a jug in the kitchen for that kind of emergency. And it doesn't have to be just a plugged filter. It could be a broken pump. It could be a national disaster. Who knows what causes the water to suddenly turn off in the faucet. So when you open up the faucet, there's nothing coming out but air. It could happen at any time to anybody. This is what we've been talking about all throughout this show.
Right.
And we look at this as you know, it's a life-changing event. When you go to the sink and there's no water there, that's really going to change the way that your whole day works. I mean, think about it. If you can't flush the toilet, if you can't take a shower, if you can't open up the sink to make macaroni and cheese, all of that freeze-dried food that requires water that you stored up, without water coming in, how are you going to do it? The only way you're going to get it is either to trek out to somewhere and filter it yourself, which also might make you a target, or to have it stored up in your house, which is a much more viable solution, particularly at the beginning of a disaster. We've had all of these things that came up, like the Ferguson riots and things that have been going on in this country, and we've had an opportunity to look and see what happens. The first 48 hours, the best solution you have, if you can't get out ahead of it, is to weather it in your place. And you don't want to really be having to go out looking for water in that time. You need to have water in your house. I mean, what does the government say about having water? I mean, how much are we supposed to
have? 1 gallon per day per person for at least 72 hours.
So 3 days, 1 gallon per person, you're going to figure...
Two for you.
A minimum, then, of probably 4 to 8 gallons of water in the house. So, you know, 2 5-gallon buckets of water would be a good start.
Yeah. You know, I've looked back to emergency preparedness from my childhood, and I remember Hurricane Fran was 1996, and my dad running the bathtub full of water because he just had a feeling that the power would go out and we would need to flush toilets.
Yep.
So on top of the water he had prepared for us to drink, the water he had stored, he had also prepared for us to have to use the bathroom. And be it that we didn't have an outhouse any longer, it was time to flush the toilet.
Right.
So we ran the bathtub full of water, and we'd dip it out with a bucket and pour it down the toilet.
And, you know, that's that theory of using the bathtub as reserve reservoir has taken a lot different form now, because mm-hmm. there's a product out there called the Water Bob, which also is carried by our sponsors at True Prep. And what it is it's a giant, basically, balloon that you fill up in your bathtub, and it keeps everything from jumping in the water. It has a spigot on it, and it has a pump, so you can pump the water out of the tub. It holds...
You mean no soap scum in your drinking water?
No soap scum in your drinking water, mm-hmm. no dog doing laps around the bathtub when you're not looking.
Like, emphasis on the word laps.
Laps, yep. Yeah, and, you know, see, the animals will do that, absolutely. They'll be sitting on the edge of the sink drinking the water.
Or you're going, eat your carrot cake.
Or eating your carrot cake, yeah. I mean, those animals will do just about anything. And here you're walking in and you're like, I'm going to go get some drinking water. I'm going into the bathroom. And there's like 4 cats lined up on the edge of the thing going, and you go, no!
Now you have to drink after now the cats.
Yeah, you got to drink after the cats.
Know where their tongue's been.
I do know where their tongue's been. They're cats. Anyway, we love cats here, folks, and Ready Radio is very pet-friendly. We're all in favor. In fact, when we do some of our new special appearances, we're going to be coming out and about around town. We'd appreciate it if you'd bring your animals, even your service animals or your pets, to meet us, and we'd be happy to give you some tips on how to better prepare and take care of your animals during a state of emergency. This has been a really good topic. I think that it's highlighted a lot of different aspects of being ready, and which, you know, our show is all about, is about readiness. So I think that we've really made a difference here today, folks. I would encourage you, if you're listening to us on iTunes or podcast, contact us and let us know what local stations that you would think would be happy to carry Ready Radio. We're looking to expand the Ready Radio network. If you're listening to us on a broadcast station, let us know where you heard us. Or if you're listening to us in Atlanta on our flagship station, 1160, let us know that too, because it always encourages us to know where our listeners are and what they'd like to hear more about. You can drop us a line at info@readyradio.net, or you can email either one of us directly, Aaron@readyradio.net or Doug@readyradio.net. www.newreadyradio.net, and we'd be happy to answer any of your questions you have about preparedness, about emergencies, or even any of the topics you'd like to hear live on the show. We're going to start a new segment next week where we take one of our listener comments and contact that listener and bring them in as a guest for us one segment of the show to answer their question live on the air. If you'd like to participate, just send us an email, let us know how to best to reach you, and the best topics will start showing up on air on Ready Radio. You've been listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. Stay tuned next week as we are in our new time and our new format, Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock, and we will talk to you more then next week.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Aaron get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday mornings at 8, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.